Hey guys, happy Friday morning. It is roll-up time, third week of June. David, you ready to get into the roll-ups?
Absolutely. My favorite piece of content out of the Bankless ecosystem is, of course, the Friday weekly roll-up, where we roll up the entire week of news in the crypto industry in as fast as possible. And so we go through the markets, what's happened in the market, releases, news, ecosystem takes, and then we finish off with what Ryan and David are excited about, and of course the cherry on top, the meme of the week. This episode is a little bit different in that we are actually sprinkling some memes throughout the episode, and so if you want all the memes, you're gonna have to stay to the very end, because there are little Easter eggs of memes throughout this entire episode. It's gonna be a good one.
Absolutely. You guys can check that out to get the most memes into your brain via YouTube. That's the way to get this visually. Also comes out on the podcast. David, before we get in, we got to talk about our friends at Ledger, because they're doing some amazing things with Ledger Live. So if you have a Ledger, as I think many listening to the Bankless program do, not just one, but many ledgers, there are new ways you can start. There are new ways you can start using it in DeFi, all sorts of new ways through Ledger Live. Do you want to talk about this for a second, David?
Yeah, totally. I think we're going to get into this, but I think we're in this big consolidation period in crypto, and this is the time for you as a listener to refine your crypto environment, right? Like if you just like yeeted into crypto in the last few months and you haven't really figured things out and you don't have a hardware wallet yet, you need to get a hardware wallet. Ledger is like the first stop into the world of banklessness, and the combination of a Ledger hardware wallet plus the Ledger Live software, it really unlocks a lot of the powers of DeFi as like a really easy stepping stone to get into the world. So if you're new to DeFi, if you have friends that are new to DeFi, the Ledger hardware wallet is something you absolutely need, and it pairs very well with the Ledger Live app.
Absolutely, guys. So now's the time. Get your equipment prepared. We've got kind of a lull in the market, so make sure you've got the right equipment for the Bankless journey. And you can see a link in the show notes to help you with that. That's bankless.cc/ledgeryt. All right, David, you ready to talk about markets?
Market time. All right.
What is happening in the markets? And I mean, what is happening in the markets? Bitcoin, let's start there. Where are we at?
We are at $38,300, still struggling to keep its head above that $40,000 mark, which is where Bitcoiners have said that they kind of feel safe. Bitcoiners feel safe above $40,000. Below it, we're still kind of in no man's territory. Don't really know what we're doing. We had the El Salvador news this week, and that pumped up Bitcoin up to $43,000, but it quickly retraced all the way back down to $40,000, kept its head above $40,000 for most of the week, but now we are dipping once again below that $40,000 mark.
Yeah, are people disappointed in that? Did they think the El Salvador news would be more persistent? It seemed like there were some good things that came out of that, but also maybe some regulatory FUD that came out of that. So it's a double-edged sword, or maybe just doesn't excite the market as much at this point in the cycle. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is a classic indicator of a bear market that good news does not show up in the charts. And I have to say that that's what I'm seeing right now. Like the El Salvador news did not really revitalize Bitcoin in the way a lot of people hoped for. That being said, at the same time, there is generally a lull between good news with Bitcoin and where it actually does show up in the markets. For example, MicroStrategy, for example, which we know that literally the Bitcoin price is higher because of MicroStrategy. How could it not be? They have over 100,000 Bitcoins on the balance sheet. But the MicroStrategy news didn't really get to start being reflected in the Bitcoin chart for multiple weeks afterwards. I think it was like 6 to 8 weeks afterwards. And so that's kind of the narrative that I'm hearing from CK, my favorite Bitcoiner. And they just Bitcoiners think that like, oh yeah, we're in this, like the world's going to have to like come to terms with this and they're going to figure it out. And so they'll start buying when they slowly figure it out like 6 to 8 weeks later.
Wait, David, we just said, Nick Carter was our favorite Bitcoiner. Do you have two? Or were you going? Well,
CK is my homie, my in real life homie.
IRL friend, yeah, Bitcoiner. Yeah. Okay. There we go. All right. Well, what about ETH? Is that showing a better picture here?
Nope, it's not. ETH did the same thing. It jumped above $2,600. I think it peaked out at right below $2,700, and we are now down at $2,350 at the time of recording. Continuing exactly what Ledger said on our State of the Nation with him, which I continue to find extremely insightful and helpful. Definitely go watch that if you have not yet. But It looks like crypto is just range bound between for Ether between like 2,000 and 3,000, and for Bitcoin between like 35,000 and 40,000. That's kind of going to be where we're going to hang out. That's kind of the gist that people are saying.
I still feel like Ethereum's kind of feel safe around above 2,000, so still feeling safe. But like if it dips below 2,000, not feeling so great about ETH price. Yeah, like Ledger, the TLDR of that episode, in addition to showing us how to trade, which was much needed help for me, he basically said that he thought there's a decent chance that ETH and Bitcoin are kind of flat from here on out for the year, for the remainder of the year, the next 6 months. We're talking about that. We'll have to see how all of this plays out. But of course,
and also no one knows.
Like no one knows.
New news can happen.
It was a guess, right? It's like, but the interesting thing about that guess is it's kind of a contrarian guess because it's not how the pattern has played out in previous cycles, right? Mm-hmm. In previous cycles, this is either a lull and then we snap right back up, or like the market's over, we hit the top and it's all down from here for a while. All right, ETH Bitcoin chart, the ratio, how is the ratio holding up? It's down a bit.
Same kind of like ranging pattern. It's on the lower end of the range. The range that I think is being established is between 0.06 and 0.08. And we are at that low side of that range at 0.0612. And so we are, we'll see if we can, kind of bounce between these two ranges. But so overall still pretty high.
Not too bad.
In terms and overall, historically 0.06 Ether BTC is high historically.
Back to where we are in early March. Early May. Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
Yeah, so they're ETH BTC really establishing a floor, perhaps. Hopefully, it doesn't break down because we like that number to be high. At least I do.
Okay. Speaking of breakdowns, I want to talk about that other ratio that we talk about every week, but not yet because I think that has broken down, David.
Hang on. Don't count.
Hang on your hats. Okay, we'll see. Anthony Sassano, this chart is absolutely incredible. He says this is the amount of ETH locked in smart contracts. It's at 23% of all ETH supply in smart contracts. This is a similar level to what it was, he points out, which I thought was interesting, at the DAO event. The DAO, of course, like original 2016, when everyone in Ethereum basically thought the DAO was this killer app. It was like a decentralized investment vehicle. It was the only app. And they just like, everyone is so excited. They just, all ETH holders there, this is a much smaller amount of them, just shoveled all of their Ether into the DAO. And of course, there was a hack, a very famous incident, and we've talked about it a lot. But now we're back to where we were, except that at the time of the DAO, Ether was worth 230 million ETH locked in the DAO, and everyone thought that was amazing. Now ETH locked in smart contracts is worth $63 billion. $63 billion, 5 years, pretty crazy.
Yeah, there's two stories here. At the DAO, the event of the DAO, the reason why it was able to capture so much ETH is because ETH was extremely undistributed, right? And so while there was 22.5% of all ETH in there, it was really only a relatively small handful of players because Ether hadn't been distributed. Ethereum was 1 year old. And so it's really just a bunch of OG whales who had like Ether between $1 and $10. The fact that we have an equivalent amount of Ether in smart contracts nowadays is a story of how many more smart contracts there are to deposit Ether into. And those smart contracts are really now like compelling places to deposit Ether into. And the other story, of course, is that Ether this time around is very much treated as a monetary asset. And the applications attracting all of those Ether deposits are treating Ether as a monetary asset, and that's why they are receiving deposits. And so the story of this is like in 2016 with the DAO, Ether wasn't a money and there was only one contract to deposit the Ether into. And in 2021, Ether is money and there's a ton of smart contracts trying to compete for those deposits. And that's why Ether is reaching like 22.5% of all Ether deposited into smart contracts. And I don't think it's going down at all. I think it's marching right up to 50%.
It's so much healthier, right? So like about 10% is distributed in DeFi contracts. So all the Aave, Compound protocols we know and love, close to 4 or 5% or so of that supply is deposited into the Beacon Chain staking contract. So as you're saying, David, not all in one place. You look at this chart in 2016, it's just like nothing. And then straight up does not look healthy. Getting to where we are now has been a series of sort of apps that have really earned the ETH that they have in them. So it's just a cool story. It's going to be cool to see that. Let's talk about total locked value in DeFi, because we always talk about it every week. We're kind of range bound again. I guess that's the story. About 60 billion or so locked in ETH, locked in DeFi right now.
Yep. Nothing too much there, except for the fact that Aave continues to hold the number one spot at 14.5% of all TVL is in Aave, which is pretty cool.
By a healthy margin, but did you look at this? Curve is number two.
Interesting.
Unseating Maker now has the bronze medal. Curve is number two. Aave number one. DeFi Pulse Index. Are we flat on the week here too? Let me zoom out to the week. Yep.
A little bit flat. Wow, what a boring market. It's flat and everyone's sad about it.
Hey, a flat market, I have no complaints. It just gives us more time to build cool stuff. All right.
Look at these numbers. These are great. Okay, we are now looking at the DPI versus ETH. I called the bottom at 0.13, said that that was the bottom. On Uniswap, DPI versus ETH is at 0.1299. On SushiSwap, ETH DPI is at 0.1301. Call it a wash at exactly 0.13. The 0.13 bottom call still intact. Still intact. I'm not admitting defeat yet.
You are hanging by a string, though. Like, this is just like, there's no way this is going to stay intact for another week.
Oh, come on. Have some faith.
No possible. And by the way, it did drop. Look at this.
Yeah, but if it drops and comes back up, I'm still claiming victory. It needs a meaningfully
breakdown.
It has
to be on our weekly roll up, like at the time of recording our weekly roll up. If it's below 0.13,
if it's below 0.13 for two weekly roll ups in a row, then I will admit defeat.
Okay.
And it's got to be below 0.13 by, like, not just a sliver, like a decent amount.
Is there some goalposts moving here?
No, shush, no.
We'll see. I don't think it'll hold no matter how you move those goalposts, David. Let's talk about this. Mind-blowing revenue numbers from Index Co-op. Really cool DAO to highlight. Really cool DeFi product as well. They made close to $1 million in top-line revenue over the past months. This is like an ETF killer. It's like DeFi's answer to
BlackRock.
BlackRock, Vanguard Group, like ETF products, index products, and they're crushing it. This is a tweet by Peter Pan. I think this is the Index Co-op's
org structure. It's like the org chart, right?
David,
but even broader than that, it's like orgs plus partnerships.
Yeah, we've gone to some Index Co-op calls. Like, I'm not into, like, I haven't done much in the Index Co-op DAO, but we've attended some calls, and that is just like,
it's fluid,
they
man.
Run. It's fluid. It is run well. Everybody contributes. Everyone knows what they're doing. I really feel like the Index Co-op DAO is kind of a model for other DAOs to learn from.
Yep.
Like, I encourage people, if they're listening, if you're part of a DAO, Index Co-op, if you're not the Index Co-op DAO, but like Bankless DAO or any other DAO that's forming, go check out what Index Co-op is doing, how they're managing their processes, because I feel like they're just nailing it, and they're laser focused on meaningful metrics that will deliver great products and deliver AUM into their products. Super cool.
Yeah, and the reason why we are talking about literally the org chart of Index Co-op in the market section is because of the tweet that Ryan was just sharing a second ago. Like, is it a coincidence that Index Co-op, perhaps the most organized DAO in the entire space, is also generating an insane amount of revenue? Like, no, I don't think so. And so this is a story of a DAO with on-chain smart contracts that puts money into the Index Co-op bank, and off-chain people organizing other people, right? So, you know, capital coordination, people coordination. Like, there's a story here. Index Co-op really killing it. Nice job, guys.
Yeah, you're starting to see that. Even like the comment about Aave. Aave has managed their DAO and their operations very well. You're starting to see DeFi protocols separate themselves, not just on the idea, but also on the execution and organization around that idea. And I think we'll continue to see that. All right, let's go to what's happening next. Bitcoin in the Lightning Network. All right, so Bitcoin in the Lightning Network has accelerated to over 1,500 Bitcoin in the Lightning Network.
The through line here is that Bitcoin in the Lightning Network, the supply has really been flat for a very long amount of time, and it's finally setting new highs.
Here's the chart.
So it peaked out in July of 2019. And then it dipped through all of 2020. And we are finally breaking into new highs of BTC supply in the Lightning Network. There's very much a renewed interest in the Lightning Network ever since the Bitcoin 2021 conference in Miami. And that's being shown by more and more people depositing Bitcoin into the Lightning Network.
Guess who else is excited, David? Jack Dorsey.
Big shocker.
Twitter.
Jack Dorsey CEO says, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey says, it's only a matter of time before Twitter integrates Bitcoin Lightning Network. Only a matter of time is kind of the same thing as saying soon, TM. We've heard Jack make comments like this before. I'm waiting to see it. I don't really know what Twitter would do with Bitcoin integration that's like meaningfully different than just like, why don't you also just like pass around dollars? I think more crypto Twitter or more Twitter people would want to pass dollars around each other, but interesting to see what Jack has in store for a Lightning Network Twitter integration.
David, I have kind of a hot take on Lightning here.
I know. Let's hear it.
Okay, so I think that Bitcoiners should take a step back and ask themselves why Lightning has the tiny, almost minuscule level of adoption that it has, mm-hmm. right? Like, I get that it's increased a little bit. There's 500, I guess, additional Bitcoin in Lightning over the past few months. But this is still a very small number. Like, it almost is insignificant. Like, it almost better, right? And like, we've been talking about the year of crypto has been talking about the year of Lightning since like 2018. Mm-hmm. 2019 will be the year of Lightning. 2020 will be the year of Lightning. 2021. I remember there were like memes in Ethereum about payment networks coming, like Raiden, for instance, and State Channels and like Plasma. These technologies, these things didn't work out. But you know what? Like, I feel like the Ethereum community realized they didn't work out and then they moved on. And I also feel like the Bitcoin community is just stuck on the Lightning meme and they're not taking a step back and looking at adoption. Like, these numbers are small, David. Mm-hmm. We're talking about 0.0083%. That's yep. two zeros in front of the 83% of Bitcoin supply in Lightning. We just talked about total locked value in DeFi, right? 10% of all ETH,
right.
23% inside smart contracts, yep. 23% versus 0.0083% of Bitcoin in Lightning. And I'm not being a hater here because I support non-custodial, bankless,
right.
peer-to-peer transmission. I think Lightning as a technology is trustless and it's great, but we should also step back and ask ourselves, like, why it's not working? Is it because people don't want to spend their Bitcoin, to your point? Like, stablecoins, maybe the use case, like
right.
Bitcoin, digital gold. Hey, that worked well. I don't want to spend my digital gold. I'll spend my crappy fiat dollars. Maybe that's a reason. Maybe it's also the capital inefficiency of these payment networks. Maybe it's user experience. Maybe it's people don't care as much about decentralization when they can use a custodied Bitcoin bank for these things. Anyway, I'm just kind of over and kind of exhausted by the memeing of Lightning mm-hmm. without the real world adoption. That was okay in 2017, 2018 to get excited about these kind of like a 500 Bitcoin gain here or there. But like, it's 2021. We have DeFi.
Right.
Like, we don't need to settle for this. So if that feels like a rant against Lightning, I'm sorry. I appreciate the technologists working on this. But at the same time, let's be real about our progress here. And the technology certainly hasn't panned out the way I think the advocates hoped for. And maybe we should think about alternatives.
Yeah, I 100% agree with basically everything you just said. I think the reason why I wanted to bring this up in today's weekly roll-ups is kind of to give... And maybe this is what you're critiquing is, but giving the Bitcoiners the benefit of the doubt. Like, there was Lightning Network hype at Bitcoin Miami, and Bitcoiners that I pay attention to are once again stoked by Lightning Network. Maybe that is just straight up Stockholm syndrome or some version of it where like they don't really have a choice. Like, what else are they going to be excited about? Like, Taproot is also here, but also, is that really all that cool of an innovation? That's up for debate as well. Maybe they're just beating the drum about like the one innovation that they have. At the end of the day, Bitcoiners are excited about it. They're talking about it. So we're talking about it in the news. But yep. Yeah, Ryan, everything you said, I'm kind of on board with.
Well, we'll see. Look, I'd be super excited if
maybe we're missing something. We are not deep in the weeds. We are not Lightning Network at all.
I don't run a Lightning Network node. Guys, yeah. If there's something we are missing here, reach out to David and I and tell us what we are missing.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk about...
Don't ask that.
No? Okay. I'm sure the Bankless audience is friendly, mm-hmm. and it's certainly open-minded. All right. Let's talk about this. Bearish uni fee accrual. This is super interesting, David. So the top Uniswap pool right now. So if you recall in Uniswap V2, there was only one fee pool mm-hmm. percentage. Like
fee
every
structure,
fee,
yeah. mm-hmm.
fee structure was set at 0.3% every single pool.
Yep.
In Uniswap V3, you have three different tiers of pools. I believe it's three. There's yep. a very low tier of pool where it's 0.05%. There's still the standard 0.3%. And I think there's like a 0.5%, right?
1%.
1%. Okay. So 0.3, there's one whole percent. It's not 0.1%.
Yep. Nope. 1%. Okay.
So there's really expensive. There's mm-hmm. the way it used to be sort of normal, and there's low fee. What's really interesting is the USDC ETH pair, the lowest fee tier, the 0.05%, just surpassed the 0.3%. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is it means
surpass
less
it in
fee.
Volume, in trading volume.
Exactly. Yes. That's important. Not total
over
volume,
the last 24 hours, not volume. Over the last 7 days.
Correct. So we can't extrapolate this trend until we see a trend too much. Mm-hmm. But what would be interesting, I think, mm-hmm. is if low fee liquidity pools like won out. Mm-hmm. And like, why wouldn't they win out?
Right.
But the analysis here, the second order analysis here is probably that what could happen then is some of these pools commoditize and then fees are lower. So possible fees back to Uniswap holders in the form of revenue right. are also lower. So does this start to chip away at the armor of any kind of AMM value accrual, token value accrual hope, mm-hmm. right? So like the idea that, hey, these pools will just commoditize and fees will kind of collapse to near zero and there won't be much revenue generated over the long term by automated market makers. I mean, it's good for users, mm-hmm. but for holders of the Uni token, what do you think this means?
Yeah, I think this is an extension off of very early Ethereum conversation in 2015 to 17, where people were talking about the power and possibilities of smart contracts. And people are saying, you know, this is all going to be open source software, because if somebody makes a smart contract on Ethereum that implements a fee, people will just fork it and do it without the fee. Turns out that never really happened. And really what's happening instead of forking out fees, DeFi apps are competing to get lower and lower fees, right? DeFi is a crucible of capital efficiency and fee competition. And we are now like converging upon lower and lower fees as this competition gets more and more intense. And so the 100%, the lowest fee tier structure of Uniswap generating the most volume on Ether to dollar pairs is really, really interesting. Usually the thought was that lowest fee tier, the 0.05% fee tier, was really kind of meant for stablecoin swaps or like-to-like asset swaps, just because why am I paying a whole 0.3% on like trading crypto dollars, right? Why am I doing that? It makes more sense when, you know, things that are like priced stay inside of the same bound to have a lower fee for that. But now we're seeing Ether trading in that lower fee tier. But the other half of this argument, to continue on with what you were saying, the Uniswap has less margin that is available for them to capture fees on, in theory, right? If everyone is trading in this lowest fee tier, there's less of a, you know, total collected fees for the Uni token to really capture if it ever wanted to turn that on. But if we go back to our conversation with Joel Monegro, it's more about, it's less about the specific revenue captured by the fees and more about the power to direct money, right? So if a lot of money and just value is circulating through Uniswap, regardless of the fee tiers, then the Uni token holders govern over the flow of funds, that's valuable for the Uni token holders. And the way that he described this is that if all these users who are using Uniswap to trade and they're all using the 0.05%, you know, trading pool, they are incentivized to keep that 0.05% like trading like the same, right? They want to control that fee. They want to keep that fee low, and that incentive to have power and governance over the fee tiers and how fees are directed goes into buying demand for the Uni token. So it's less about, is the Uni token actually going to receive cash flows, and more about how much is the UNI token in demand because of the incentive to direct the cash flows of the Uniswap governance? And so Joel's theory was that you don't actually need to capture cash flows in order to have a valuable UNI token. And so this is a domain that we're going to have to explore in this space. Like, sure, there's tokens that don't capture actual cash flows, but they have power. And that's going to be an incentive to buy and hold the tokens. And so maybe we actually have to reconstruct how we even think about these tokens.
That's it could be. Yeah, it could be. And I see the other side of the argument. And by the way, this doesn't necessarily mark a trend. I mean, mm-hmm. Uniswap is generating massive amount of fees in general.
Fees but it are does down, make, but total revenue is up.
Yeah, it does make me less comfortable, I would say, with my understanding of DeFi token assets. Mm-hmm. We'll say it that way, because there's definitely, if you treat DeFi tokens as capital assets, just like stocks, and you can model them based on net present value, future cash flows, that's a very beautiful thing. If now we're saying the model has kind of shifted a little bit, where you can't just look at the cash that it generates, and it's this other thing, it's like this power governance dynamic.
Power tokens.
We don't know how to model that, right? Then that's,
they're not capital assets, they're power tokens. I love that meme.
Well, there you go. So we'll have to see how this plays out. Anyway, I thought that was super interesting this week. Let's talk about something else that's interesting. Nearly 90% of cryptocurrency investors surveyed said they weren't scared by May's brutal sell-off. What are they doing instead? They're planning to buy more.
Mm-hmm. See, this is why this whole like range bound thing is actually a period of very high pain, because No one's selling, because people are still bullish. We still think.
Well, who is selling? Somebody's selling.
Right. Yeah. No. Very few people are selling. People are trying to accumulate because they want to buy more. But now we're accumulating at like $2,300 to $2,600 Ether. That's a really tough price to accumulate at. Like, it's kind of expensive. Yet everyone is still expecting it to go more, right? And so like that's where the max pain is, you know, only the most convicted people are really like ready to just yeet their funds into Ether. And so the people who are trying to stack as much Ether as possible, they want to stack it below $2,000. But a lot of people want to stack it below $2,000. And so it seems to be there's a lot of people with demand to buy Ether, but it's also demand to buy Ether at this, you know, historically this expensive price.
This is crypto holders right now.
First meme of the show. Basically what crypto holders are the Wolf of Wall Street, I'm not effing selling meme right now. even though we all got smacked by that 60% drawdown plus a little bit of a rebound, everyone is like, nah, I'm not selling. No way.
Guys, we will be back in just a moment with some releases, because the builders are still building. But before we get to releases, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Balancer is DeFi's most powerful automated market maker. Typical AMMs just have two tokens inside of one liquidity pool, which can lead to fractured liquidity across the many pairs in DeFi. With Balancer, you can access the full power of multiple tokens inside of one single AMM, which unlocks an entirely new playing field of possibility. This makes Balancer an awesome building block for so many different use cases. Balancer pools can make asset indexes, but instead of paying fees to portfolio managers, Balancer lets you collect fees from traders who use your portfolio for liquidity. Additionally, Balancer smart pools can be programmed to have properties that change according to predetermined rules, such as changing the swap fee based on market conditions, or even liquidity bootstrapping pools, which can help you launch and distribute your token with day one liquidity. At Bankless, we used a liquidity bootstrapping pool to sell our BAP t-shirts to much success. Balancer V2 brings powerful new features that makes your money work even harder for you. In V2, idle tokens are capable of generating yield in DeFi without sacrificing liquidity in the pool. To top things off, Balancer is reimbursing gas costs with BAL rewards, meaning that your gas fees are reimbursed up to the cost of the transaction with the Balancer governance token. Balancer's mission is to become the primary source of liquidity in DeFi by providing the most flexible and powerful platform for asset management and decentralized exchange. Dive into the Balancer pools at pools.balancer.exchange today. Aave is a borrowing and lending protocol on Ethereum, and just recently released Aave version 2, which has a ton of cool new features that makes using Aave even more powerful. With Aave, you can leverage the full power of DeFi, Money Legos, Yield, and Composability all in one application.
On Aave, there are a ton of assets that you can deposit in order to gain yield. And all of those same assets can also be borrowed from the protocol if you have deposited collateral. Here you can see me getting a 200 USDC loan against my portfolio of a number of different DeFi tokens and ETH. I'll choose a variable interest rate because it's a lower rate than the stable interest rate option, but I could choose the stable interest rate option if I wanted to lock that interest rate in permanently. One of Aave's V2 features is the ability to swap collateral without having to withdraw your assets, trade them on Uniswap, and then deposit them back into Aave. Aave does all of this for you, all in one seamless transaction, so you don't have to repay loans in order to change the collateral you have backing them. Check out the power of Aave at aave.com. That's A-A-V-E.com.
All right, guys, we are back with releases. The first is MetaMask is going institutional. Welcome to the layer of the blue fox, they said. I guess MetaMask is releasing an institutional version of their popular browser extension. David, what's happening here?
Yeah, I'm actually not too sure. I would like to get a peek under the hood of what this new version of MetaMask is, which apparently is focused for institutions. To me, it's if it's kind of similar to its current instantiation of a DeFi web, a web browser that has your Ethereum wallet or connects to your Ledger and allows you to connect to DeFi apps. How does it change if it's for institutions? Is it still a web browser? Is it something else? Can I use it? I kind of want to find out what MetaMask institution is. Maybe I'm an institution. I think that some clarity around this would be interesting. But I'd like to see what about MetaMask is different and now that it's for institutions. Interesting that MetaMask is going after the institutional client. And I think that kind of started with their DEX order routing feature, and starts to just bring a lot of the power of DeFi into the actual MetaMask interface. So maybe they're kind of just being a white glove service, a white glove app.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a trend for DeFi. Like the Aave institutional liquidity pools is another, DeFi opening its doors to institutions might be something that a lot of protocols and infrastructure in the space start to do. All right, David, let's talk about Alchemix because they released something cool this week and then there were some issues. What is Alchemix? What did they release?
Yeah, so Alchemix is the DeFi app where you can deposit dollars and then you can get a dollar loan against your dollars. So interesting primitive. What you do is you deposit dollars and then those dollars get deposited into Yearn and then you can borrow up to 50% of your deposited dollars in more dollars. And then the loan pays itself back from the yield generated by Yearn. And so you actually don't have to pay back your own loan. It just pays back itself over time. Alchemix just released its long-awaited AL ETH, which is the same thing I just described, but now instead of dollars, it's now ETH. So you deposit your ETH into Alchemix. Alchemix goes and deposits that into Yearn into other places, and then it gets yield on that ETH and to pay back your Ether alone. And so then you can deposit, 10 ETH into Alchemix. You can immediately borrow 5 ETH against that 10 ETH, and then that 5 ETH that you're borrowing will slowly pay itself back over time. So it's really just this magic tool to deposit into Ether into, and then you wait, and then you have more Ether after you're done waiting. And so it's pretty cool.
You get to bring your ETH interest forward in time, basically, yes. And spend it now.
Yes, exactly. Right. And so really for the ETH bulls out there who are long-term oriented, long-term focused and are bullish ETH no matter what, this is a great product for them because you already have ETH. You put the ETH in the Alchemix and then you wait and then you have more ETH later. And so if you're bullish ETH and you have a long time horizon, this is the product for you. It's been a very anticipated release, and now that it's finally here, everyone's super stoked. Had a little bit of a hiccup out the gate. There's a little bit of a bug in the code. Nothing terribly critical, but basically the initial depositors were able to borrow AL ETH and then also withdraw their collateral. And so that's bad. So they paused the contract. Funds are safe. No one really lost any funds. But they paused the contract. They fixed it. I don't know if they've redeployed it or not. But basically they are, here's the section that I think is worth reading is how are we going to put this right? First off, we know that we have the most amazing community in DeFi. This is an indisputable fact. So we are asking, if you would like to support the protocol, the DAO, and the devs, please consider distributing any excess ETH gained during this time to the new transmuter. Right. And so some people were able to withdraw their collateral before their debt was repaid. And so there's a slight like incorrect order of operations with how Alchemix worked. That's what they're asking to do. If you benefited from this, please go put your ETH back. If you want to be a white hat, accidental white hat hacker, I don't know. But at the end of the day, this is going to be a small hiccup in the rollout of Al ETH. It doesn't really affect the protocol in the long term. Nothing about urine was impacted either. So congratulations to Alchemix for getting Al ETH out the door. Sorry about the hiccup. I believe in you guys in the long term.
Yeah, agreed. That's a good take. Let's talk about this too. We talked about index co-op earlier.
Time to get in bed.
What is bed? So, we've made no secret that we're bullish on kind of two different asset classes and three sort of sets of assets entirely. The two asset classes are crypto money and the banking infrastructure on top. So DeFi protocols primarily, right? So crypto monies and the bankless thesis are Bitcoin and ETH. And DeFi protocols, of course, are the DeFi tokens. And you can buy them all at once without having to guess by doing something like purchasing the DPI index, which is super cool. Now, the bankless DAO and index co-op are combining forces to give you one asset that puts that, smushes that portfolio together in a third Bitcoin, a third ETH, a third DPI. So you could buy one token and kind of forget it. This is something that you and I have been excited about for a while. We actually proposed this on the index co-op governance forum, like, hey, you should make something called a BED index. What does BED stand for? Bitcoin, Ether, DeFi. Now the bankless DAO and index co-op are actually bringing that to market. So vote passed through index co-op to go work on that, bring that to market. I think it should be just a couple of weeks away, but it's super cool to see two DAOs working together to come up with a new index, a new financial primitive. And I'm excited to talk about this in Bankless Material, because I think it's a great way for people to get started on their crypto journey with some investment exposure that doesn't involve a whole bunch of garbage that they might end up buying if they're just looking for short-term pumps.
There's so many things to talk about here. You hit on one, which is DAO to DAO collaboration, just two DAOs making products. And so DAOs don't necessarily have to go to the outside world. They can just talk to other DAOs to make really awesome products. The meme is absolutely fantastic. Sleep comfy.
We're going to have fun in bed.
Right. Absolutely. Bitcoin and Ether, the two crypto monies, and then also DPI, the set of tokens that are capital assets, cash flowing assets, really gives you the full spectrum of what Ryan and I consider to be the most quality crypto assets in the entire space. You know, there's really only two ecosystems with full blocks. That's Bitcoin and Ethereum. And then there's really only other, the tokens that are out there are that are cash flowing tokens are the tokens that are inside the DPI. And so you can sleep comfy in bed. And I'm really excited for the bankless DAO to get these streaming fees coming out of this index. And so the streaming fees is being split between index co-op and bankless DAO. So, the market cap of the BED index in the same way the market cap of DPI takes streaming fees and gets split between DeFi Pulse and index co-op. Same thing. The more people that own the BED index, a small streaming fee gets redirected towards the bankless DAO and the index co-op. And I'm really excited for the bankless DAO to put on its like marketing hat and salespeople hat, right? And because the bankless DAO also super organized. I don't know if you've been the listeners been in the Discord or not, but it's one of the most organized and like exciting and vibrant Discord channels there are. And what happens when like the bankless DAO has this product to really like market? I expect to see a lot of bed memery on crypto Twitter coming soon.
On-chain cash flows, that's the story. Very cool. Let's talk about Lyra, David. So Lyra is DeFi's first complete options automated market maker. So this is another options protocol coming to DeFi, but this one's a little bit different because it uses some different compute. It's using like a Black-Scholes pricing model. And apparently this sort of thing was super expensive, impossibly expensive to deploy on something like the Ethereum mainnet. So they're deploying it in layer two, a product, a primitive that didn't make sense, an options primitive that didn't make sense on mainnet. being deployed directly in Optimism on a roll-up. That's pretty exciting. That's pretty cool. This is just being announced. It hasn't rolled out yet. I think it's also waiting for Optimism. But I've seen the UI. I'm super excited about what they're bringing to market. Just like the possibilities that Layer 2 unlocks for DeFi.
I really think options is a new frontier of DeFi that I expect to be built out in the next 6 months. I remember it was right around our first Ethereum Bulls podcast episode in November or December. And right when Ether was really making new highs, its first new highs since like 2018, I was like, damn, I should buy some options. Where can I go get options on Ether? And the answer was centralized exchanges that doesn't take U.S. customers. And so I couldn't.
DYDX? DYDX? I mean, without a, yes.
That's margin, though. That's not options.
Right, true.
Right, yes. And so I went on to Deribit, and I was like, oh, let me get in a Deribit account. Like, oh, like can't do U.S. citizens, damn. And so I was like, well, what DeFi app can I get my options on? Like, what's up? And turns out options are actually kind of hard to do on the main chain, so it's definitely a good product market fit to put on a layer two. Kind of wish that this was available when Ether was $600, because I remember talking to my roommate. It's like, Hunter, Hunter's my roommate. I think that Ether is going to be $4,000 by May. If I had got those options, it would have been perfect.
Say 4K by May.
I said 4K by May, and I will get him to corroborate this. He was teasing me. He was like, dude, I bet you wish you bought those options now, huh? And I was like, damn right you are. Options are going to be hot, and especially DeFi options. Think about composability with this as well. Like, what happens if you can tokenize an options position? That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a big space. And once again, enabled by Layer 2, which is super cool. Speaking of Layer 2 sidechain world, Paul Brody. So this is Ernst & Young. He leads their blockchain area. Mm-hmm. Super pumped to share that Ernst & Young, ENY, is now delivering tokens on Polygon. Really cool. Yep. They're getting into the Layer 2 sidechain scene.
A big four accounting firm is deploying tokens on top of Polygon at layer two. Like, let that sit in your brain for a second. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is definitely. Volumex Finance version one is now live on Ethereum mainnet. David, I haven't checked this out. It looks like they got a cool video, but what's Volumex?
Volumex, it looks like it's a tokenized project to tokenize volatility. So it reminds me of the VIX index in the traditional finance world. Now we have tokens that track the volatility of other assets, right? So, Ether volatility, Aave volatility, Uniswap volatility.
We can bet on the volatility now.
Yeah, you can bet on hedge against it. You're right, exactly. Really important DeFi primitive and just another money Lego that probably has a lot of surface area to latch onto other money Legos. So that's going to be pretty cool.
Live on mainnet. Here's an article where you can read all of the details behind that too. Gitcoin grants round 10. Mm-hmm. Let's fund public goods together for the 10th time. Super cool. That launched actually on Wednesday of this week and is live. 650K in matching for this grant round. Anything you want to say about that, David?
Yeah, this is actually the first grant round that Bankless will not have a grant. We are now Gitcoin alumni. Yay! And so thank you to all previous Bankless donators to Gitcoin. We now consider ourselves not really needing donations anymore. And to some degree, that was a large part of the confidence that we had in Bankless at large. And I know with me and my writing, I used to have my own Gitcoin as well. People can prove out that they have product market fit on Gitcoin, right? And so it not only is it an initial seeder of capital from donations, but it also lets people be confident that the product that they have is actually desired by the community. I know that I left my previous job to do Bankless sooner as a result of the signal that I got from Gitcoin. So thanks, Gitcoin.
Yeah, I would say, look, Bankless probably wouldn't exist without Gitcoin. I mean, there's some dark times in 2019 where I was like, is anyone really reading this whole Bankless thing? This is before we even started the podcast. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of a slog. Right. And Gitcoin really gave me the confidence to kind of continue writing that the community was supportive of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And without Gitcoin, I don't think Bankless would be here, certainly not in its current form.
You used to write every single edition of the newsletter at the very
start, and right? Yes, exactly. And look, there was a lot to it, and growth was kind of slow during the early days. Everyone thought DeFi was dead, Ethereum is dead. all the stuff we were talking about didn't matter. And the community support really made a big difference. So shout out to Gitcoin. Thanks, guys. Public goods. Now we have a self-sustaining media company on top of bankless goals and on top of Ethereum. So speaking of media companies, David, someone else is launching a podcast. What's this podcast?
Yeah, this is Alexandra Botez. She is a chess streamer, a pretty big chess streamer on Twitch. And she famously had Vitalik Buterin on to play chess with him one time. She's really good at chess, so she absolutely spanked Vitalik. But it was a fun piece of content. And it turns out she's also in the background been learning about Ethereum. And so now she is making more content specifically about Ethereum. And so she has an Ethereum developer friend, Torfer Benson, and every other week she's going to be streaming about Ethereum stuff. So more Ethereum content in the Etherverse. Big fan of that. I consume basically every single piece of Ethereum content that's out there. And so I'm ready to expand into new territory. So Alexandra, thank you for contributing to the world of Ethereum content.
Absolutely. Maybe come on Bankless soon. Maybe we'll have some content opportunities too. All right, David, some drive-bys on the releases front. DYDX Perpetuals, they are now listing Matic on DYDX. So super exciting. Of course, DYDX is now fully deployed on Layer 2 as well. So gasless transactions. What's the next one here, David?
USDC live on Arbitrum. It's got its own contract address on Arbitrum. And USDC on Polygon is already above $2.3 billion in market cap. And so Pete Kim, who I believe works at Circle, is that true? I don't know. Or maybe Arbitrum. Coinbase. Works at Coinbase. And he says, with all these scaling solutions going live, the summer of DeFi season 2 is already here. I'm feeling bullish at AF. Somebody is subscribing to the DeFi summer thesis.
Cream Finance is subscribing too. It looks like they are launching their money markets on Arbitrum as well. So everyone pouring into layer twos, everyone pouring into rollups, just like we thought it would play out. Can't wait for these things to fully open up, though. It's coming soon.
Parcel, introducing Parcel treasury management for DAOs. It looks like this is a new service to help DAOs work with their own capital and also reward people that work for the DAOs. And I think really just the message here is that there's more and more infrastructure coming for DAOs every single week.
Yeah, and Wyvern is one such DAO. They're actually pioneering. They're developing their own infrastructure. We use a number of their tools, but they are giving a facelift to Wyvern, entire user interface facelift. And honestly, I love Wyvern, but I think it needs a facelift.
It needs this the most, yeah.
It needs this the most out of all of the largest DeFi protocols, I would say. And this is starting to look good. So look for that coming soon. David, that is releases. Let's get to the news, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, Bitwise, $70 million from Wall Street investors, including Stan Druckenmiller. Pretty impressive. What is Bitwise? I know we've had them on Bankless Podcast before, but for those that don't know, what is Bitwise?
Yeah, Bitwise has one foot in the financial advisor camp and one foot in the crypto camp, and is now doing a very good job expanding into DeFi as well. So Bitwise has a bunch of index products. They have the Bitwise, big market cap, the top 10 crypto asset market caps. We reported on that not too long ago when Polygon broke into that Bitwise top 10 crypto assets. They also have the Bitwise DeFi index and a number of other indices as well. And so they are really bridging the gap between, home, family offices and personal financial advisors, trying to educate them and onboard them as to the merits of crypto assets and also DeFi. And so Bitwise just raised $70 million, not a small number at all, to continue this fight. And so that Matt Hogan episode that we did with the State of the Nation was one of my favorite episodes. And that's kind of where we started chanting the chant that financial advisors, they understand DeFi. They really like DeFi. It really lands well with them simply because it kind of fits into their mental models that they already have about how finance works. Really, really excited to see Bitwise expanding the fold here.
Definitely. They're definitely going to be a bridge to traditional finance for Ethereum, for DeFi. Let's talk some other Ethereum stuff. This is the Polygon daily gas used chart. This is pretty incredible. Look at this ascent. There's another chart I want to pull up, which is, let me see if I can find it. Network utilization of Polygon, which is kind of off the charts. Let's see if I can find that. Look at this, David. Network utilization.
Yep. 98%. So Polygon has received full blocks for the last 2 to 3 days. So earlier on this podcast, I said that Bitcoin and Ethereum were the only ecosystems with full blocks. Polygon actually also has full blocks. I didn't include that earlier because Polygon's a layer two to Ethereum. But this is the first Ethereum layer two sidechain scaling solution, whatever you want to call it. There's debates and arguments. It's about what the correct label is. Basically, it's a scaling solution. It looks and feels like an L2. That's why I call it an L2. And it's got full blocks. And so it's the first Ethereum suburb that is now sold out. Like, everyone's living there. Like, it's now the first saturated suburb of Ethereum. So that's pretty cool.
And of course, people, when a suburb gets saturated and there's lots of traffic, people complain about the traffic, and rightfully so, because when you're in a full block blockchain ecosystem, things get slower. There's congestion. You have a harder time getting transactions through. Gas fees rise. Mm-hmm. So, Polygon initially, when you started using it, used to be basically free.
Yep.
Gas costs, Matic tokens, of course. But now I think that's no longer the case. You have to sort of bid more Matic tokens in order to get a transaction through. So it's a different user experience. But yeah, the story here is a suburb of Ethereum is filling up, and we're starting to see full blocks already on some of these sidechain networks. Kind of cool, kind of interesting to watch.
There's a ton of things to talk about. Like, first off, already full blocks on an L2. Well, maybe the listener's like, well, damn, I thought it was a scaling solution. It's already saturated, like WTF, like what's up with this? At the end of the day, the amount of block space that Polygon has versus Ethereum is like, I can't remember the specific numbers, but I think it's like 10 to 30X, right? So I think it's closer to the 30X range, whereas there's literally 30 times as much capacity than the Ethereum main chain. And so while the blocks are full, transactions are still really, really cheap. They're still under a penny for a transaction, and they happen in like 1 to 2 seconds. So it's still scale, but we just know that there's demand. And that's the other part of the story, is it's very obvious that there's a ton of demand for L2s. And this is in stark contrast to the Lightning Network, which has been really, really slow to adopt and grow. And Ryan, kind of why you had that Lightning Network rant early in the show. Like, no, we know that people want L2s. We know that they work. The demand for them is reaching 100% of its capacity. And the other cool thing about the story is that Polygon validators are now receiving a decent amount of rewards in Matic tokens. And so just like Ether stakers are going to be receiving Ether on the main chain, Polygon and Matic stakers are receiving Matic rewards on the Polygon network. And so this is a crypto economic system that is alive now. With full blocks, that's where I start to consider these crypto economic networks to be alive systems. So congrats to Polygon.
It's going to be interesting when Arbitrum launches to see how long it takes for their blocks to fill up completely, right? Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing we learned in the Arbitrum conversation we had with them is, let's say they're calling Arbitrum 1, the first rollup, they release an Arbitrum technology. Let's say that gets full. What do? You release a second one.
Right.
You release a third one.
Do it again.
You could keep doing this
until
the Ethereum main chain is congested with like rollup transactions, essentially. So we've got a lot of space here.
That's the vision. That's why we call it rollup centric Ethereum.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about this. So Mark Cuban has been experimenting pretty heavily with DeFi. He put together this great blog post called "The Brilliance of Yield Farming, Liquidity Providing, and Value in Crypto Projects." A lot of great insights. He also talked about, there's a small mention of a yield farm that he was doing inside of the Polygon network. I think it's a Titan was the yield farm. Titan, and this is some kind of an algorithmic stablecoin, David, and he was yield farming that, and he's talking about it in the post. Well, unfortunately, Mark Cuban got rug pulled, David, in the Polygon network. I call it rug pull shorthand, but it's actually more like a bank run of some sort. The algorithmic stablecoin mechanism just broke, and even using the term stablecoin for these things is sort of generous, I would say, because this is not a collateral backed stablecoin. It's sort of a meme energy Ponzi backed stablecoin. We talked about this in the past, and there are different mechanisms that work better for these things than others, but none of them have worked perfectly. None of them have worked long term at all. So a very speculative liquidity pool he was dabbling in, and he got rug pulled with the rest of them. He says this: I got hit like everyone else. The crazy part is I got out, thought they were increasing their total locked value. Then bam, meaning like money gone. Right. I'm not sure how much, just a tiny amount for somebody like Mark Cuban, of course, but also a negative experience in DeFi in his journey. What are your thoughts?
Well, these are the traps that you find on the frontier. And right, just to say, the reason why you say rug pull is because it went to zero. There was no malicious actor here. The crypto economic system fell apart. The incentives broke down. And there's a critique going out there from Hazu, which I think we're going to get to, where the incentives for these uncollateralized stablecoins are the same thing as like a Ponzi, right? And not a Ponzi scheme, because a scheme implies that there's an actor that does the rug pull, but a Ponzi game, where at some point the game is up and everyone runs for the doors. And so here's what Hazu says. Apparently, Mark Cuban called for that there needs to be some sort of a regulation around the label of a crypto dollar or a stable coin, because not all stable coins are the same. You know, there's over collateralized stable coins that with like DAI that has worked very, very well. And then there's uncollateralized stable coins, which literally zero have worked out for the long term. And so Hazu is quoting Cuban here when he says, "We need regulation to decide who is allowed to call itself a stable coin." And then Hazu says, "The sad thing is he has a point, and the DeFi community only has itself to blame for that. The community has entirely failed at self-regulating what a stablecoin is supposed to be." And then in a follow-up tweet, Hazu said, "At every opportunity, I have warned that under-collateralized stablecoins cannot work. Some of them can survive for a few weeks or months, but they all fail eventually, leading to large financial loss for participants. Shame on everyone who still calls them stablecoins today. Mentions them in the same articles as USDC, USDT, DAI, etc., instead of what they actually are, pure Ponzi schemes." So Hazu, with his scathing critique of uncollateralized stablecoins, and to his point, we haven't seen an uncollateralized stablecoin actually work yet. That is the story of Mark Cuban got his first, it's tempting to call it a rug pull, even though that's not the right word, but like, congrats, Mark Cuban, you got your first, like, you know,
damage.
Your thing went to zero. Sorry, pain. Your thing went to zero.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And like, so, but here's the thing. So I read the kind of the Mark Cuban quote, and by the way, he said this in a passing way. So I'm not sure if how much he really meant that we need regulation to decide who's allowed to call it. Like he also admitted, hey, this was a crazy speculative thing. I lost money. That's how it goes. It's like angel investment. Like you win some, you lose some. But like having regulation decide what is allowed to call itself a stablecoin in DeFi is an absolutely terrible idea. Like I get Hasu's point,
right?
That, these things aren't really stable coins. Like they should be called something else, because they haven't earned the stablecoin quality yet. But like people who are in this know that already. I mean, like people who listen to Bankless, we know the difference between ELGO, uncollateralized stablecoin, and something like DAI, and then something purely centralized like USDC versus something like RAI. But to have regulators step in and put a whole bunch of regulation around the language that the ecosystem uses, bad idea, really bad idea. So anyway, maybe next time we have Cuban on, we'll talk about this a little bit. Go into some depth here. This is kind of how the industry self-polices, to be honest, right. David. Like people get hurt,
right.
And then they're like, "Oh, we won't do this next time." It's like ICOs.
Ouchie.
Oh, we won't.
Ouchie. Humans tend to avoid pain. By the way, that's something we've adapted to do.
Exactly. So this is all part of the market learning. In my opinion, we do not need regulation to tell us what terms to use.
Hazu says that the community has entirely failed at self-regulating what a stablecoin is supposed to be. I still think that we have that potential to do that. And now is the time. I think Hazu is perhaps being a little bit hasty with saying that we haven't done it yet.
He is. And I think that like a lot of people in the community have been educating on this. It's just like people saw huge APYs and they got greedy, and this is kind of what happens. Anyway. All right, David, InstaDap, $10 million raise, new funding. What's going on?
Yeah, InstaDap is a middleware protocol that helps bridge different apps and just allows you to more efficiently transfer assets between them, raise $10 million, and also release the InstaDap governance token. And so if you are a recent user of InstaDap, you may have a governance token to claim.
Some airdrop stuff going on. Goldman Sachs plans to offer Ether futures options to its clients as well. This is another bank entering into the crypto futures market.
Ether, once again, being more and more institutionalized and financialized as a commodity money in the traditional finance world, which is something that we want to see if we are thinking that Ether is actually going to be adopted as a global money.
We're talking about synthetics and DeFi. DYDX with an absolutely monster raise, a $65 million Series C raise. This is a team that has already expanded into layer two, and this round was led by Paradigm. David, DYDX seems like they are in it to win it. What are your thoughts here?
Congrats to DYDX. It's been one of the longest standing DeFi apps around. I'm going to go ahead and say that there's a token coming. I think there's a token coming.
Seems like it. NFT world, what's going on with PleaserDAO?
Shout out PleaserDAO. PleaserDAO keeps on going to bat to buy these ridiculously priced, internet culture NFTs. They just bought the Doge NFT for a whopping 1,696.9 ETH.
This cute thing.
This is
worth 1,700 ETH.
1,700 ETH. The OG Doge photo, right? And like the other cool thing about the story is, Ryan, go down to the bids history. The first bid came in at 725.420 69 69 69 ETH, and then that got bid up by 7,069.
Look at this. It's
all meme numbers. 1,000.696969 got beat by 1,069.420, which got beat by 1,234.56789 ETH, which got beat by 1,337.
Look at this guy. Don't you feel bad for $2 hot dog, Doge?
$2 hot Doge. And then the second to highest bid was 1,420.1337 ETH, which got beat by the winning bid of 1,696.9 ETH. So the bidding itself is actually a meme, which is absolutely awesome.
Who owns this? Who
does PleaserDAO? PleaserDAO.
No, I know who owns it now, but like, who is the creator? Is this like
the owner of the original Doge?
Look at this. Mm-hmm. This is what's cool. Resale royalty. So anytime, like if PleaserDAO sells this in the future, the original creator gets a 10% royalty on that too.
Mm-hmm. PleaserDAO is just sucking up all of the coolest, most expensive memes in the space. And they are also yet to lose. They are undefeated with buying NFTs. So congrats to PleaserDAO.
You know what's funny, David, though, is like, I remember you didn't think there was much behind NFTs not too long ago, right? What's changed for you? Because is winning all of these NFTs a good thing if they're actually like silly pieces, like JPEGs that you can copy and paste? I want to know what the evolution of David's thought process on NFTs is, because now you're a member of PleaserDAO. It sounds like you're bullish on this. Mm-hmm. Is it like the collective purchasing organization that you're bullish on? Or are you actually bullish that this picture of a dog is worth 1,700 ETH?
No, it's not the picture of a dog at all. It's owning a piece of internet history. That's what's so awesome. I'm definitely finding myself a DeFi guy, not an NFT person. I don't speculate on NFTs myself, but I'm very happy to be part of a DAO that is literally buying pieces of internet culture and claiming it for themselves. That's what I'm interested in. And so there's a decent amount of leadership inside of PleaserDAO that I'm kind of a relatively passive member. I just put my capital into the DAO and say, hey guys, here's some money, go buy NFTs with it. And I really didn't even put all that much in. I kind of wanted it to be in the cool kids club, but PleaserDAO is straight up owning like deep cultural pieces of the internet, and I'm here for it.
It's part of the cool kids club, but it's also like the way you learn. Mm-hmm. The only way you learn is by participating in these types of groups and actually doing it yourself. So it's super cool. I wonder what they're going to do with all this, like open a museum or what.
They got plans, and those plans are going to come on Bankless at some point in time.
We got to talk about that. Alpha League. All right. Let's get to some Bitcoin stuff. The World Bank reject El Salvador's request to help them. El Salvador, I guess, went to the IMF and said, hey, could you guys help us implement Bitcoin? Because they needed some assistance in a few ways. And the World Bank came to them and said, no. Why? Because Bitcoin has environmental shortcomings and transparency shortcomings. So we're not going to help you, El Salvador.
Yeah, that's Nick Carter would say that these are two things on the FUD dice, you know, environment and transparency. I can't think of a more transparent system than a public blockchain. So I don't really know what they mean there. But the other take here is that the powers that be are not helping Bitcoin get adopted.
Yeah, I don't think they like El Salvador's move here. Paul Turo Jones, he talked about Bitcoin diversification this week, or crypto diversification, particularly in the lens of inflation, coming inflation. He said that people should have 5% of their portfolio allocated to Bitcoin as they face the threat of looming inflation. 5% didn't seem too long ago where that number, hedge fund advisor, well, first of all, they were talking 0%, so no one was recommending this. Right. Then it was like 1%, now it's 5%. Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting from someone like Paul Turo Jones, who is a respected figure in institutional investment circles and on Wall Street. Any thoughts here?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that he says that unlike human nature, this cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, is 100% certain. So high conviction from Paul Tudor Jones. Also, but you have to kind of understand, like, if it is 100% conviction, why isn't his portfolio 100% Bitcoin?
Oh, you just triggered another meme, David. Just open up the door.
So here's the shifting eyes gnome meme where Paul Tudor Jones says, I like 5% of my wealth in Bitcoin. And then there's me. And then the shifty eyes gnome meme is implying that, like, oh, I got way more than 5%. My portfolio is Bitcoin.
I think millennials do. I think Gen Z does.
Right.
I know we've got some takes about that later, but
there's your second meme Easter egg. There we go.
MicroStrategy unveiled another $1 billion stock offering. It says the proceeds can be used to buy Bitcoin. Another week, another MicroStrategy. This time, they're getting into more esoteric financing. They want to get as much cheap fiat as they can to purchase Bitcoin through any means necessary. That's what MicroStrategy is really turning into. It's pretty interesting that Michael Saylor is doing this and being so blatant about it.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It used to be like, we want Bitcoin on the balance sheet to protect our company from inflation. And now it's, we want to turn MicroStrategy into a holding company for Bitcoin, just absolutely, completely, blatantly. We'll see. MicroStrategy is about to blast through that 100,000 Bitcoin supply mark on the balance sheet. Like, let's see where they end up. Like, do you think he makes it all the way to 200,000? I have no clue, but like, he's gunning for it.
200,000 is a decent portion of Bitcoin supply.
Of 21 million? Absolutely.
Yeah. David, I think you just unlocked another meme.
Here we go. 2010, this is a meme out of our Bitcoin. 2010, no one uses it. 2012, only computer nerds use it. 2013, only drug dealers use it. 2014, only money launderers use it. 2017, only gamblers use it. 2019, only a small percentage of the population uses it. 2020, only small companies use it. 2021, only small countries use Bitcoin. What happens in 2022? We will find out.
Wow, nice. All right, David, sorry. Kill that awkward pause.
Okay,
on the regulation and crypto banks front, David, Coinbase listing SHIB. This timeline is both amazing and horrifying, says Anthony Sisano. So SHIB is one of those
doggy tokens, the leading doggy token.
Definitely Ponzi meme coin territory. Coinbase listing them. I remember in 2017, 2018, Coinbase had an entire framework that it went through before it listed a token. Has that just fallen by the wayside?
Completely.
Like Coinbase just...
Yep.
Okay. I guess why? So like one, are you mad about this? Does this annoy you? Does this anger you?
So the reason why that framework came about was in 2017, a bunch of ICOs were actually securities. And so they needed to put that framework out there to like, as a defense, like, you know, here we're doing our best to like only list legitimate assets. And so like that kind of just got relegated to history. And now that Coinbase doesn't really need to defend itself against anything anymore because the SEC is not really coming after them. So the SHIB, it's not really a security. Now it's just kind of this whatever token to some degree, like Coinbase needs to serve demand. And if there's demand to trade SHIB, then like it's Coinbase's job to allow that to happen. At the end of the day, there's no further analysis to SHIB token. It's not like we can go and do a deep dive as to the fundamental analysis of SHIB token. It's just a doggy token. And so as far as like promoting the legitimate sides of this industry, this is not doing that. But like if there's demand, then like F it, I guess. Like do whatever, Coinbase.
Do they have a role in protecting investors, protecting their users, or do you think it should just be like you know, hey, if you demand it, we should list it. Free markets.
Do we get to talk about how awesome Uniswap is to be able to provide liquidity to any asset and then knock Coinbase for listing any asset? Like, is that?
I think it's a great point. So, yeah. Like, I think this is a great point and something that I struggle with. But, like, one thing I do know is I don't blame Uniswap at all when you remove the ability to actually say this is allowed and that's not allowed. And you just say it's completely open and permissionless. Anyone can list.
Right.
That absolves all responsibility to me. And that is like a fair mechanism. Where I have more trouble is when a gatekeeper can arbitrarily say, yeah, this asset's okay, but this asset, no, that's a no-no, and act in a sanctimonious way about why they're saying this asset's okay and that asset's not. Do you know? Like,
sure.
We're not listing this to protect investors, but we're willing to list this other thing.
Right.
Right. So I don't have a big problem with Coinbase listing this, I guess, free and open market, but I'll be looking into the future to see if there's kind of doublespeak about like protecting investors. And I do think the best model for all of these exchanges is not to have the ability to gatekeep. Right. And of course you can't do that on a centralized exchange. You have to be a gatekeeper, but on Uniswap, anything goes. And I think that's great.
Coinbase listing an asset is kind of like blessing an asset, right? Like people aren't used to complete crap being available to them. People, and that's one of the pitfalls that people come into is they go into Robinhood and they type in any ticker and they assume that there's some sort of quality to that, right? Because it had to get through all the regulations in order to be able to be traded on public markets. People come into these crypto markets and kind of come in with that same mental model, thinking that the spectrum of crap to quality is roughly the same spectrum that they find in traditional markets, when really there's things that are way more quality, like ultrasound money, and then there's also the complete and absolute crap. Like people aren't ready to tussle and deal with this massive spectrum of quality. And when Coinbase comes and lists SHIB, it's giving its blessings, right? Like it's saying like, this is a good asset. Like it's okay. We're going to list it. Like we like this one, but it's a goddamn doggy token. Like what the hell? Like I'm privy to both arguments.
Yep. So am I. I understand both sides of that one. Let's talk about this. State Street is creating a dedicated cryptocurrency division. This is just another big bank. I think this is America's second oldest bank that is getting into crypto. I think that is really the story here, David. More and more are. Let's talk about this. Millennial millionaires love crypto. Did you know that millennial millionaires have at least 50% of their wealth in crypto? That just blew my mind when I read that headline that's coming out of a recent survey that CNBC did, a millionaire survey of 750 investors, and noted that that number surprises me. Actually.
Well, are they millennial millionaires because of crypto, or they're millennial millionaires and now that they are allocating to crypto? Because crypto has made a bunch of
millionaires. Can I answer that question?
Tell me.
Yes. I think it's both. Right. I think they became millionaires because of crypto, but also they're keeping their assets in crypto.
Sure, totally. This reminds me of a quote, which is going to be a little bit unsavory, but I'm going to say it anyways. German physicist Max Planck said that science advances one funeral at a time, or more precisely, a new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is more familiar with it. And so millennials are slowly going to take over the world because boomers are just going to, you know, pass on, and then the millennials are going to inherit all of the boomer money, and it's all going into crypto because millennials like crypto.
This is what happens every single generation. And I'm sure the children, the grandchildren of millennials will have their favorite asset class. And and I think crypto is absolutely crazy. Right. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows what could happen? This last one, Panama to present a crypto-related bill in July. Is this the next domino to follow? Follow El Salvador,
Bitcoin,
that
Cold
is.
War.
It's coming up. All right, guys, we're going to get to takes in just a minute. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Bankless is proud to be supported by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum, which is what Ryan and I call a money robot. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. Something brand new in the Uniswap ecosystem is the Uniswap Grants program is now accepting applications for grants. We have been saying this for a while and we'll say it again. DAOs have money and they are in need of labor. If you think that you have something to contribute to the Uniswap DAO, apply for a grant to Uniswap. Just look at the size of the Uniswap treasury. It's almost $3 billion. This mountain of capital is looking for labor. Do you have something of value to contribute to the Uniswap DAO? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a Uni grant at unigrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. That's exactly what we did to get Uniswap to be a sponsor for Bankless, and you can do the same for your project. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless.
Gemini is the world's most trusted cryptocurrency exchange. I've been a customer of Gemini since I first got into crypto in 2017, and it's been my main exchange of choice to make my crypto buys and sells. Gemini is available in all 50 states and in over 50 countries worldwide, and on Gemini there are markets for over 30 various different crypto assets, including many of the hot DeFi tokens, and it's one of the few exchanges that has liquid DAI markets. Gemini just launched their Earn program, where you can earn up to 7.4% interest on 26 various crypto assets. If you're tired of paying fees in DeFi, or you don't want to worry about DeFi exploits, but you still want to earn interest on your crypto assets, Gemini Earn is the product for you. Another product I'm stoked to get my hands on is the Gemini Crypto Back Credit Card, which gives you 3% cash back on all of your purchases, but paid to you in your preferred crypto asset. When I get my Gemini credit card, I'm going to make sure that I get my cash back in ETH. So whenever I buy something, I get a little bit of ETH bonus back to me at the same time. You can open up a free account in under 3 minutes at gemini.com/gobankless. And if you trade more than $100 within the first 30 days after sign up, you'll be gifted a free $15 Bitcoin bonus. Check them out at gemini.com/gobankless.
All right, guys, we are back with the hot takes of the week. The first take I want to get into is a take after reading this very long article, fantastic research article called MEV, that's minor extractable value or minimum extractable value in ETH2. There's a lot to this article, don't want to get into it, but here's the key point. In ETH2, MEV goes to stakers, David, and I feel like this is a huge element of this for ultrasound money that we just don't talk about. And they actually go through some numbers here, right? So when we talk about ultrasound money and Ethereum issuance in ETH 2.0 kind of going to validators, we don't talk about minor extractable value. We talk about transaction fees. We talk about issuance. But minor extractable value, MEV, or minimum extractable value actually goes to validators too. And if you were to take all of the MEV from Flashbots today and kind of model that out and give that to validators now, the current APR of ETH, if you start staking it in the Beacon Chain right now, is about 7%. But with MEV on top of that, it increases to almost 13%. Mm-hmm. So 12.86%. So that's almost a doubling, like close to a doubling when you add MEV on top. Which all this to say, when you add MEV, I feel like some of our ultrasound money case was actually a little bearish on the numbers. Like,
we've made bearish content? What?
I mean, just validators might make a whole lot more money. Mm-hmm. And APYs could be a whole lot higher if you take into account MEV. And we don't actually know what that number is, but the minimum bound mm-hmm. is like a potentially doubling of right. the issuance that's available to them today. So that's pretty crazy.
MEV is a really big problem. But one thing that gives me a little bit of relief is that MEV is this amount of ether that makes the blockchain unstable because there's so much fight to capture that MEV. Go listen to the MEV panel that we had not too long ago to get more details on that. But at the very least, at least those MEV rewards go to the people that are protecting the network. And the people that are protecting the network are intrinsically the people that are most bullish on ether, the asset. That's who protects the network. So at least there's that.
Yep, absolutely. Let's go to this next take.
Frank Shaparo from The Block says, I would say about 99% of cryptocurrencies are either under or overvalued, which kind of feels like a funny joke at first glance. But also there's something to say here, right? Like SHIB token, for example, I'm going to go ahead and put in the 99% in the part that's overvalued. And then Ether, I will go ahead and put in the side that's undervalued. And that's really been the story of this entire industry since Genesis. There are really big diamonds in a ton of rough. And the amount, like, it's a struggle to learn about crypto. It's a struggle to understand this industry. And that's why coal gets mixed up with diamonds all the time. Like, people start shilling EOS, they start shilling like Namecoin or Bitcoin Gold, and people like can't really understand it too.
Wow, those are some tokens from 2017, 2018, right? You dug up, David.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
they're gone now.
I could say some more modern tokens if you really wanted me to. But like that's really the story of like Bitcoin has been like having this narrative trouble with the rest of the world, talking about how incredibly awesome Bitcoin is, and then people come into the industry and like, oh, but what about Bitcoin Cash though? It's cheaper, right? And so this is the story of our industry, is that everything is roughly around this, playing in the same field. And some of these things are absolute coal and some of these things are absolute diamonds. And it's up to you to determine which is which.
Yep, you got to figure it out. That's what the quest is all about. David, let's talk about this Kevin Owaki tweet. This is in response to a tweet you made. You said, we are in accumulation phase. Don't miss it. You're talking about price
accumulating ether. Yeah, ether is in the accumulation phase.
And Kevin Owaki says, I've secretly been accumulating friends this whole time. Aw,
mm-hmm.
That's sweet.
And honestly, that's how you make it in this industry. Not only by doing a good job and dollar cost averaging responsibly into the assets that you believe in, but also during times of accumulation, which we previously called these bear markets, but now I'm guessing we're now going to call these accumulation times, because apparently crypto assets just don't go down, at least not too low, knock on wood. But Kevin Owaki says, during these times of accumulation, when you're accumulating crypto assets, don't forget to accumulate friends. If you want to stay in this industry for the long term, it's important to go west with us. Go find a buddy, find an accountability buddy. If you don't make
find
it through
find a business partner too.
Find a business partner. That's what Ryan and I did. Hey,
yeah,
works for us.
It's like bear market. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, shared interests, friends, mm-hmm. relationships. We're all pushing this industry forward, and this is a great time to build your network, build your crypto network. That's what he's talking about. In addition to having fun and making friends,
right. Crypto can be fun. You just need some people to make some jokes with you as you do it.
It's not at all like Wall Street, right?
Not at all.
This is another tweet. Okay. I guess you're responding to someone. You're saying, well, maybe I should go to the top. Most of the innovation in crypto is eventually just going to be known as finance. So we drop the D from DeFi and we just call it finance. Somebody says open finance. And you say, nah, just finance. Traditional finance will be called closed finance. And then this guy says, the future Wall Street, in quotes, will be known as crypto Twitter. And then he said, oh, this is going on the weekly roll-up. Why'd you say this, David? Why does this take speak to you?
Yeah, Wall Street is this, at least from the outsider's perspective, Wall Street is kind of like this insular group of, you know, insiders who make trades and bets amongst themselves and shares alpha amongst themselves. And it's, you know, it's a permission.
And they all went to elite, right? Like mm-hmm. U.S. you know, and
it seems very permissioned, right? And then exactly. Crypto Twitter is the opposite. It's crypto Twitter is Wall Street, but on the internet, where it's open, everyone is shouting all of their alpha as loud as possible, trying to get everyone to hear it. And so it's like Wall Street, but inside out. Also, this is Ryan Rasmussen, who is the new DeFi analyst over at Bitwise. Bitwise that just raised $70 million. Also, one of my in real life friends.
Nice.
Congrats to Ryan for getting that DeFi job. He's a good follow. He's got an article coming on the Bankless newsletter sometime next week.
Very cool. All right, David, let's get to what you're excited about. What are you excited about this week?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm in San Diego. If you guys haven't figured out by my brand new empty apartment, I'm in San Diego now. So that's pretty cool. And I'm also going to try and start up this Ethereum meetup group for San Diego. So if you live in San Diego or the Southern California area and you want to talk about Ethereum things in real life, because crypto's taking over, we need to instantiate ourselves in the real world. One of my reasons why I came to San Diego is because the beer is really, really good here. I'm going to go host an Ethereum meetup in San Diego. And so there's going to be a link in the show notes. If you are in San Diego and you like beer, let's go and talk about Ethereum over some beers. The other thing I'm really excited about is the Ether Bowl episode that is coming this Monday, but next Monday. We had Anthony Sedano, we had DC Investor, the two guests from the previous Ethereum Bowl episode, but Eric Connor got booted for being too bearish, and we replaced him by Cyrus Younessi, former Risk at MakerDAO. And I just really enjoyed that panel. We recorded that last night, Ryan, and that's coming out a week from Monday. Really stoked on that one. And I got a third one. It's the third thing I'm really excited about. There is a new show coming to the Bankless program, And that is all I'm saying. But the other thing I'll say is that Ryan won't be there.
I will not be there at all. I might not even watch it, David. I mean, I'll watch the recording. I'm just not going to promise to watch every single one live. But I'm super excited about this one. I think it's going to be tackling a whole new niche in crypto that has been missing for a long time. So, guys, stay tuned on this. When are people going to get some news? Is it going to be next Tuesday on State of the Nation?
Next Tuesday on State of the Nation, we will drop the alpha. But, yeah, it's going to be a new paradigm of crypto content.
New show, new podcast you guys can subscribe to. I'm super excited about that. All right.
Ryan.
You want to hear what I'm excited about?
I do. Tell me all about it.
Look, it's just I feel like it doesn't really matter what the markets are doing these days. If it's going up, if it's flat, if it's going down, really doesn't matter because DeFi keeps building. I really feel like at this moment, David, DeFi has reached escape velocity. Like, we didn't always know that DeFi was going to work out, right? Or even that smart contracts were going to work out. Like, there was in the early stages, all we had was like Maker. And it was kind of a question of, is this DeFi thing going to reach any product market fit? Or is it going to be a niche? I feel like, look, man, we just filled up Polygon with DeFi stuff. And some of it's crazy, right? Some of it's silly, but we filled up the Ethereum main chain with DeFi activity. Now we're filling up entire neighborhoods and sidechains like Polygon. We have product market fit. All of these DeFi protocols have massive treasuries too, David. Like, there's a lot of money sloshing around this space. Why? Because a lot of value has been created in this space. So that's self-sustaining too. And now with layer two, we have all of this new land, this new real estate to stake a flag in. So all of these reasons, I think, like, culminate in this is this sense that DeFi is just going to keep growing. It doesn't matter whether it's making mainstream news, people are talking about DeFi, or the market's up or down. Like, we're just going to keep building. And that's a really fulfilling feeling. The flywheel is in full effect. There's like really nothing we need to do. The machines are just going to keep building. And we're going to have a better financial system on the other side. So that's what I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm. Historically, betting against Ethereum and now also DeFi has been a bad bet.
It's been a absolutely bad bet.
Yeah,
it'll continue to be. All right,
time,
meme of the week,
time, Ryan. I think it's time for the meme of the week. As if this would be like the fourth or fifth meme of the show so far, but like the episode is meme themed. We actually have like seven memes. So here we go.
Yeah, what is this one? What are we looking at?
We're not looking at anything.
I should share it. Here you go. Here it is, meme of the week. What are we looking at, David?
We are looking at that Star Trek meme, and it's the lady asking two friends, "Are you guys friends?" And the lady is crypto newbie. She's asking two Star Trek people, "Are you guys friends?" One Star Trek person is Bitcoin, and Bitcoin answers no. Yeah, the second Star Trek person is Ethereum, and Ethereum answers yes.
At the exact same time. I love it. So true.
All right, next memes. Here we go. Sazzle shaved his beard, and he says, in an effort to try and end this crab season is sideways season, crab season market action, I have made the ultimate sacrifice to the beer gods. ETH may resume up only now. Anthony Cezano knows how to market himself. He basically is just giving crypto Twitter a free meme format. It's the meme format. And crypto Twitter absolutely took the bait and made some pretty awesome memes. So let's go through them, Ryan.
Yeah, this is just a template he's providing. This is the template. Twitter.
Oh, God. Here's the Star Wars meme where Princess Leia is smiling at Anthony with a beard, and then he shaves the beard. And then
that's Padme, David.
Oh, Padme. Not a Star Wars fan. And then Padme looks at Susanna without the beard, and the smile kind of disappears.
Love it.
Next one. Here is Crypto Wife, a great memer. You're gonna have to. Do you know this reference, Ryan? What this?
I don't know this reference.
This is a reference of a TV show. Yeah,
Anthony is like sitcom dad with headphones.
Now, kids, just because Coinbase listed SHIB doesn't mean it's a good investment. Talk to an adult if you're not sure. Dad, Sazzle.
It's awesome.
Here is the meme of somebody throwing up the peace sign in front of the grave. The grave says Sazzle's beard, and then there's Sazzle throwing up the peace sign. And then here's Sazzle in a Mario hat because of the mustache is absolutely fantastic.
That's it.
And this is not a meme. And that's the last one. So congrats, Anthony. Another successful meme up in your pocket.
Awesome, guys. That has been the roll-up. Of course, none of this is financial advice. ETH is risky. DeFi is risky. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in. But we are headed west. Thanks for joining us on the Bankless Journey.